Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Fan Interference with Julie DeCaro.
She's smart, she's fun, she's different.
You've called her nasty names on Twitter. Now join Julie as she breaks down the world of sports.
That's never boring.
And now, here she is, Julie DeCaro.
She's really great.
Welcome into this edition of Fan Interference. It's been one doozy of a day. We'll get to that in just a minute. I'm really excited to have the guy joining me who's joining me tonight. His name is Benjamin Albright. He's a host on Mile High Sports out in Denver. He's written about the NFL for Yahoo, ESPN, Fox Sports, just to name a few. He is very active on Twitter, where you can follow him at AlbrightNFL. Benjamin, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I thoroughly enjoyed your intro there. The part where the guy goes, "You said nasty things about her on Twitter." Now,
no kidding.
That's the best. That is the best intro.
The plan was for it to be a little bit bluer than that, to be like, "You called her the C word on Facebook," but then we decided not to do it. And speaking of being called names, you and I had a day on Twitter today, both of us. I was looking at your feed at the same time. I was like crying over my mentions. And, you know, I know that, like, right now, especially with free agency, you're talking a lot about rumors and, you know, same thing that I deal with, like, during December and coming up on the trade deadline. And I feel like it's so hard to talk about trade rumors because things are true and you get them from a great source. And then 5 minutes later, it's not true anymore. And then you get accused of, like, making things up or, you know what I mean? And you, like, you know, delete stuff because you know now it's not true. And then people are, like, you know, still tweeting it, like, 5 hours later. And stuff like, how do you deal with that kind of stuff?
Well, it's tough. I try to, you know, one of the things I kind of grew up with an uncle who was a professional journalist, and you know, he always taught me that you know, if you didn't have 2 to 3 sources independent of each other, you didn't have a story. So, you know, I try to adhere to that as much as possible. It's a bit difficult in the information brokerage age of Twitter, you know, to be able to do that, but. With different stories, different things happen. Sometimes, you know, the agent will text me and say, "Hey, this is going to be, here's, you know, this is going to be a done deal," or, you know, I'm looped in on a group text that a lot of these guys are in on, and that, you know, get that kind of stuff. And then, you know, a team swoops in last minute, and swoops that away. We saw that last year with like Frank Gore, you know, with the Eagles and then with the Colts. You know, we see that kind of stuff all the time. So it's not uncommon, and the problem is trying to suss out when is the moment to go ahead and take this to publication or print or social media or whatever, and try to avoid that disappointing the fans with something that ultimately gets changed later.
Right. And I mean, I sometimes get really frustrated because I see you get it. I get it. I see people saying it to other people all the time. This idea of like, you're just making up rumors to get attention when they don't work out. And sometimes I just want to be like, if you knew who my source was, you wouldn't say that. It's so frustrating. And then, of course, you have people who, you know, continue to troll for hours after that. I know that you talk back to trolls like I do. I don't believe in ignoring trolls. How do you handle those guys?
Oh, I just try to, you know, I try to be funny with them. I built my Twitter following, and it's, you know, a moderate sized audience. I guess I have about 20 or 21,000 followers, something like that. It's a modest following, and but I built it retail. I built it one person at a time, interaction, you know, that kind of thing. I wasn't one of those wholesale blast out news things, follow me back, follow train kind of guys. And so I built it one person at a time, and I try to interact one person at a time. I try to convert them. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's been pretty stressful.
Good Lord.
I've honestly kind of given up. Yeah, I've given up on I don't want to say given up on trolling the trolls, but I've kind of cut back on it a lot. It's not something, it's just so difficult to keep it up all the time, you know?
Yeah, it is. There's days when I'm totally zen about the trolls, and there's days like today where I just like completely melt down. And I had a meltdown about 4 o'clock today. If everyone missed it, you can go back and read my timeline. So Benjamin was going to come on a couple weeks ago, and we were going to talk about Peyton Manning, and it was right at the time that the whole Tennessee Title IX thing had broken. And I know that we are sort of on opposite sides of this, I think. And then after the press conference, I thought it would be a great time to have you on because so much has happened since then. We've had the Robert Klemko story. We've had another story come out contradicting the Robert Klemko story. So I thought that like, this is a great time for us to, like, throw down over this. So just to – you're out in Denver. Did you go to Peyton's press conference?
I did.
And how was it? What was the vibe like there? Because I felt like he was, like, dying from what I saw.
It was emotional. Certainly, I got the impression that Peyton wasn't ready to walk away from the game, but that his options were limited to ones that he found unacceptable. He obviously wasn't going to be back in Denver. Yeah. Obviously wasn't going to be back in Denver. And, you know, looking at the other options available, it was basically down to Cleveland or LA. And those are not options that Peyton Manning is willing to accept. So I think, it was sad for him. He devoted, you know, any person who's devoted basically your whole life to something and it comes time to hang it up, it's always a sad moment. But overall, it was sad and happy for the guy that, you know, to see where he's going to go and sad for him that one of the great players is leaving the game.
It's sad for all of us as we get older, I think, especially like as you approach your 40s, you notice, you know, other people in their 40s who are sort of like, you know, washing out of whatever sport they're in. And I think that adds a little bit to it, at least for me. I've been dying to ask this question. Was Papa John at the press conference?
No, I did not see him there.
I thought he might give pizza to everyone or something. So, okay. So Lindsay Jones asked a question. She's with USA Today. And she asked him the question about his time at Tennessee and about the sexual harassment allegations. And she said that she felt like that, you know, everyone had been talking about this and he was there and that she felt that she owed it to him to give him the opportunity to respond. How did the people in the room take that question? Did they react to it the same way Twitter did, where everyone just started screaming and yelling?
Yeah, there was definitely a bristle in the room, specifically from teammates. There were other media, some of which were, I don't want to say jealous, but maybe envious that she asked the question that they knew was going to be the one that got the soundbite out of the day. There were some media that were upset that she asked the question at all. My own station manager and I got into a bit of a heated exchange over it because he felt it was inappropriate to ask. And I don't feel like it's inappropriate to ask. So Lindsay is a very good reporter. She's a very good person. And I don't think that what she did in asking that question was sensationalist. I think she was being informational and doing her job. And I totally respect that she did it. I think that it was the right thing to do. And anybody who's sitting there saying that she shouldn't have done it probably has never been in that position before.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, first of all, it was very pertinent to what was going on. And also, you know, he chose to ask questions, to take questions. He could have just read his statement and sat down, you know, and he didn't do that. He took questions. And I think that, you know, she was entitled. And I think that, she, you know, was part of her job to ask. It was funny, the reaction online watching it. I was sitting in my office or my studio watching it, and it was funny to see the reaction, especially from celebrities. Like David Boreanaz was like really, really upset, and he was tweeting about it a lot. You know, he's the guy that played Angel on Buffy. And
oh, really?
Bones, and everything.
Bones,
yeah.
Or whatever? Yeah, Bones was mad about it?
Yeah, he was like really mad about it, and I was direct messaging with Lindsay, and she was like, "What? Is that Angel?" And I was like, yeah, he's really mad. So it was kind of a surreal day for her, but I wanted to sort of delve into this because I know you and I have different information about this case. And so I thought it'd be a good time for us to like go head to head and like, you know, really throw down about it. So just to recap quickly, and you feel free to jump in and tell me if you think I have anything wrong here. But very quickly, when Peyton Manning was at Tennessee, there was a trainer there named Dr. Jamie Nawright. She accused him of placing his genitals and his rectum directly on her face when she was looking at his foot. It's always been sort of played off as it was a mooning that she just misinterpreted.
Let me back up already. Let me start here real quick, because that claim was not the original claim. That claim came along later that he actually made contact with her. It did not come along until after Manning released his book. That was her claim. The original claim, the day that she filed a report, did not mention any contact and was described her not in those words, but in the actions involved.
So she says, she claims there were several incidents, not just with Manning, but with other people in the locker room, with coaches, with them calling her names and stuff like that, she negotiates a settlement to leave the University of Tennessee. And part of this settlement was that there was a gag order, basically. There was a non-disclosure. There was agreement no one was going to talk about this. Right?
Correct.
Okay. So she moves on, goes to another school. Peyton writes this book with his dad. And in his book, he talks about the incident. And this is where I think he has the famous statement about her having a filthy mouth or that kind of thing. And he basically, I think, again, tried to minimize the story or somehow sort of say that, you know, she had this coming because of the way she behaved. Mm-hmm. She sued him for violating the non-disclosure agreement and won. And they both went about their ways again. And then he went on in ESPN. It was a Football Life or one of those shows. And talked again about the incident. And she sued him a second time. And that brings us up to the Super Bowl week. And I'll admit, I had never heard any of this. I don't know where I was when this whole thing was happening. But I had never heard this. And I was shocked. I was one of those people who really put him up on a pedestal, which I should know better by now, having worked in this industry. But I really thought he was one of those guys that, to me, was pretty much untouchable. And I had never heard this story before. So it wasn't until Super Bowl week, and when this sort of all came to a head again because of the Title IX lawsuit that was filed against Tennessee, and these allegations against Manning were sort of used as a statement of fact in the lawsuit, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So now I think this is sort of where we differ. Now, then Robert Klemko had this piece that came out for MMBQ that talks about this other witness who says that this never happened and questions her motives, I guess, or questions her stability. There was a crazy email or voicemail left to someone. And then this Greg Jones guy comes out and says, I was there and it was just an innocent mooning. And it was pretty much what she said. So to this point, like, what's your take on all this?
Well, there's several facets to it. And I hate to, I don't want to go about discrediting, you know, one person in an effort to discredit what happened. You know what I mean? But there is backstory, and the backstory to that is that Jamie Nallwright, who was then known as Jamie Whitted, didn't have I'm trying to think the best way to say this. Her accounts have changed. And that's a problem for me. You know, anybody who has done that. Meanwhile, Peyton Manning's accounts and subsequently the things that he claimed, even though they should or shouldn't be taken, you know, as personal affront to the accuser, have come out to be true. If you've been over Jamie Whitted, now Nallwright's Facebook page, you will see that she is famously profane. Now, that's not to say anything. I'm very profane. So it's, you know, right. So, and we all, you know, to a degree, I think we all are, but to you know, the things that he has said and the things that have come out certainly are interesting in light of that.
Okay. Well, let me throw in my counterpoint here, which is that having experienced sexual assault, I think that the way I describe my rape now, I would describe differently from the way that it happened at the time. And the reason is that I think when you've been traumatized, it takes you some time to process what has happened. And that's why sexual assault victims' accounts do change sometimes. Now, I'm not saying that's what happened here, but I'm saying to me, that doesn't necessarily bother me. Because I think, especially if you're trying to negotiate a settlement, you may not tell all the dirty, gory details because you just sort of want to get out of there and, you know, and leave and take your money and just put the whole thing behind you. That's my like first thought when I hear that. But so now that I've thrown that out there, go ahead. Still there? Did I lose you? Uh-oh, sounds like we lost Benjamin for a minute. Well, it looks like we lost Benjamin for a second. Let's just hold on and see if he logs back in. One of the issues that I think we have between the two of us is that Benjamin's hearing from people within the NFL and people who possibly were around when this happened or have some knowledge of it. And I also know people who have knowledge of this case because they worked with the victim in this case, or, you know, the accuser, we can call her. So I think that's part of where this is coming from. See if we get Benjamin logged back in here in a second and get his microphone back so we can continue arguing about this. Like I said, if you want to follow Benjamin, you can follow him on Twitter at AlbrightNFL. He's a great follow. He always has all kinds of great information, especially about stuff happening with the Broncos. And he's been an invaluable resource during this entire thing with Peyton Manning. So it's really interesting. Just give him a second here and see if we can get him to log back in. He's telling me he just got kicked out. See how this works. Hopefully we can get him back here in just a second. So one of the things that I want to ask him about when he comes, when we get him back here, is that there are allegations that this has sort of all been, again, that this has sort of risen to the surface again because of money on the part of Dr. Jamie Nallwright. And I am curious to know if he has any information, if that has progressed in any sort of way, because my understanding is that this case came to the forefront again because of the inclusion of the details in the Title IX case against Tennessee, and that people were reading it and they read the part where they got to the Peyton Manning part and said, oh my God, I'd never heard this. I had no idea that this had ever happened. So I think that's where we're sort of differing here. And I'm curious to ask if he knows about that or if he has any inside information about that. He says he's going to be calling back in momentarily. So hopefully we'll have him back here in just 1 second. Hey, Benjamin.
Yes.
Yay. What happened? I don't know what happened.
I guess I got kicked out. I don't know.
Okay. So you were talking about the profanity on the accuser's Facebook page and, you know, some things that you had heard about her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is some of that on there. There's, you know, it's obviously that kind of stuff, but there's also a lot of veiled references. She uses coded language, calls Peyton the golden boy, and then makes up some bizarre claims about him liking men and, you know, and all kinds of stuff on there. There's also, you know,
that's 146
calls logged to the and out of the sheriff's department, stuff like that. It's just, and I hate getting into that because I don't want to get into character assassination, but a lot of her claims come across as inconsistent, and that's a problem for me. I like a reliable witness, doesn't everyone, because it makes it neat and tidy. But at the same time, you know, when going over this kind of stuff and in trying to evaluate this, you have a, you know, you have an immature young guy in a locker room who likes to be a jokester and a prankster, and he does by admission. And on the flip side of that, you've got a very serious matter with an unreliable witness. So where do we go from there, you know?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, I definitely have heard as well many stories about her, or I should say, information about her from several different people. I think that, you know, for me, it sort of goes back to this idea, and I certainly understand it questioning her credibility based on this stuff. I mean, and I think that's a fair thing to do. My concern, though, is that it's one of these incidents where it's like, okay, we don't have a perfect witness. I mean, I've done cases where the accuser in a rape case was clearly not mentally stable, but it didn't mean that, you know, what she alleged didn't happen. And the thing for me, I guess, is that in the filings that were done by her attorneys, there are affidavits from other people, and they're saying this is, you know, yeah, her account of this is correct. So, you know, how do you sort of reconcile that with her claims changing?
Again, that's the thing. If their story matches up with the story, I get that, and I get that that's also a possibility. Then again, we also have supposedly an eyewitness coming out claiming to support, you know, Peyton Manning. I for me, it's not about believing one over the other or anything like that. It's what are the facts and what do we go with from here? And ultimately, you know, they settled out of court and they decided that, you know, that was going to be the way things were, and that's that. I don't want to drag either one of them through the mud. I don't think that because Peyton is a celebrity and been squeaky clean and we love to see a celebrity fall, that we should sort of drag someone through the mud. On the flip side of that, a victim, even an unreliable witness, should not be subjected to what she is about to be and has been subjected to in terms of the court of public opinion as well. That's certainly not, reliving the incident is not healthy for really anyone. So my thing on it has been more, this was settled. This was something that was big news at the time. I mean, I was at the University of Arkansas at the time. This happened at the University of Tennessee, so it was fairly close, but it was covered at the time. Now, maybe a lot of people have forgotten because it's 20 years old and social media didn't exist then, but it was covered very well at the time.
So do you think, I know that at one point you and I had an exchange on Twitter where we talked about what the motivation was and if there was any financial motivation for her again at this point. Did you ever get any information about that?
Yeah, and it doesn't look good for her, unfortunately. She looks to be the person who leaked everything to Sean King. She is her house was currently in foreclosure, and appears to be payments made on that recently from, you know, things that she was unable to afford. So when looking at the evidence, it doesn't look good in terms of, you know, for her. And again, that's not to say that it didn't happen. It just is another piece of the puzzle that makes it look bad when, you know, all of a sudden this comes up right on the eve of the guy's biggest moment, you know, in the pinnacle of his professional career. And it turns out that, you know, all of a sudden this quote unquote scandalous story resurfaces and the lone witness, you know, the guy who's bringing it up, appears to have ties to, you know, one side of it. And she's also in financial distress, but all of a sudden she's not, you know, that kind of thing.
I guess from a legal standpoint, I just don't know financially. I mean, unless we're talking about blackmail or something along those lines, I don't know what what she could gain from it financially. There's already been a settlement. There's already been two lawsuits. And if she's the one that brings it up and not him, then there's really nowhere for her to go. I mean, I guess there's a book deal maybe or selling her story to someone. Do we think that's maybe the kind of thing she's thinking?
Yeah, that's the direction we're pretty much at. She is barred from saying anything about it, but she's not barred from releasing the documents and the information that she has for someone else to write a book about, and she can take a cut of that as the anonymous source on the back end.
With these documents, they were filed in court, so anybody should have been able to get their hands on them, right? Or was this sealed?
Well, no, they should have been able to get their hands on most of it. Some of it they wouldn't have because there was a prior incident that was reported in the university between Manning and Witted when Manning was underage. Manning was 17,
okay.
You know, at the time. So there is some of that. And some of the student stuff would be sealed because he was a student. So certain information was redacted or not available to people through the court records because he was a student and or a minor. Whereas now, because of those records, they are available.
Okay. You know, and when this whole story came out, and I have to say, I was really bummed out when I found out about this story. I guess I'd heard whispers of this. And like I said, I always sort of bought the, like, he was just joking around kind of thing. I didn't realize how serious the allegations were until the week of the Super Bowl. You know, my thing is, I guess I could even buy the, you know, he's just an ignorant kid in the locker room and he's, you know, crude and he's a football player and he acts like an asshole and, you know, whatever. He was, you know, 20 years old or 18 years old or whatever he was. But, you know, when he and Archie came out with a book, and there's some pretty damning affidavits against Archie saying that, like, he wanted to blame this on a black kid at the school and, you know, stuff like that. How do that fit into everything? Do you feel like Peyton bears any responsibility for, you know, what was said in the book and what was said later on ESPN?
In terms of that, all I can say is you know, the Peyton Manning I've been around has never shown any of that. He's never been a guy to show any racial attitudes or anything like that. And indeed, having the closest companions and friends and the people that he's played with, whether it be Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison, Nedger and James, Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, C.J. Anderson, has been around African-American players all of his professional career, has never shown that. So, you know, I don't know. Once again, these are, you know, you are talking about families in the Deep South with old South attitudes. I lived through that. I came up in it. You know, that could certainly exist. That could certainly be there. I'm not saying it is or is not. I don't have any evidence or proof one way or the other. But that the person that I have known is not that person.
Yeah, and which brings me to another question, which is something we've heard sort of in the week after the Super Bowl, especially with the Budweiser and the Papa John's, you know, endorsements he did at the end. Does anyone really know Peyton Manning? I mean, have we sort of just been subjected to what he wants us to see? I mean, I know that's true to some extent with every athlete and every celebrity, but do you feel like he's really sort of shown who he is to the world? Is who he is the Peyton Manning that everyone loves, or is there a different Peyton Manning in there that we don't know?
Oh, I would say that the Peyton Manning that the average person knows is Peyton Manning the brand, which is definitely different than Peyton Manning the person. Sure. You know, I mean, he's been branded very well. He's very conscious of that. You know, Peyton, despite the slow speech pattern and the Southern accent, is a very intelligent person.
Well, he's got a giant head, so I assume he's brain.
Yeah, yeah. He's very meticulous and he's very studied in the way that he does things. He certainly, like his press conference, when Lindsay asked that question, you saw that he had an answer right away for it. He knew that question was coming. He wasn't caught off guard by it. So they prepare for those kinds of things. And, you know, like I said, Peyton is a brand, and his wife is a brand. You know, I mean, his wife is part owner of the Memphis Grizzlies. You know, there's a lot of money there, you know.
I did not know that.
I would say that you know, the Peyton Manning that people think they know is probably not the Peyton Manning that actually is. But, you know, he's a fun-loving guy, loves to joke, loves to prank. You know, those are all things that he, you know, he loves to do and loves to, you know, loves to laugh. And so that's why he was able to do some of those, you know, the Saturday Night Lives and things like that. But I would say that, you know, the guy that you know from the Sprint commercial or the Papa John's commercial is not Peyton Manning.
Do you think at his heart he's a good guy?
Yeah, and I do. And I think that lost along the way are, you know, the millions of dollars that he has put privately and quietly into helping people throughout his career, whether it was, you know, stopping to, you know, to buy tickets for people who couldn't afford it, you know, the Super Bowls, family members, they could get themselves there but couldn't get family members, things like that, or, you know, make a wish or helping kids that were that were sick or dying. He's gone through and, you know, done a great job of trying to help people every step of the way. And I've seen the private examples of that. So I don't think that people maybe know that side either.
Mm-hmm. So we're running really low on time here. We've only got a little over 3 minutes left. But I wanted to ask you, I've seen this, I think we saw this with Peyton Manning's press conference. I think we saw this with Nancy Reagan's death. There seems to be this feeling that, you know, when people die or people retire or people move on or somehow leave the public limelight, that you can never say anything bad about them again. And I feel like most people are complex and that it's okay to acknowledge that. And, you know, people make mistakes, people do good things, and that all of it should be part of the conversation. Given that, how do you feel like we should remember Peyton Manning?
Well, I think that you should remember Peyton Manning for what he is. I think you should remember, you know, the player. I think you should remember the person and, you know, the flaws and all. We should always recognize that all of our heroes are inherently flawed. We're all inherently flawed. And whether we like to build somebody up as the model of perfection and then tear them down later because we like that and then we like a redemption story, just try to remember the person as they was. Remember what made you like that person in the first place and remember that they are a flawed human being to begin with.
All right, that's the best answer that I think any of us can hope for when it comes to this kind of thing. Thank you so much for your time, Benjamin Albright. Everybody, you can follow him on Twitter at AlbrightNFL. We're going to have you come back as we get closer to the season so you can talk about my Bears and the NFC North and let me know what's up.
Absolutely, anytime.
Okay, thanks for joining us. This has been another edition of Fan Interference. Thanks again to Benjamin Albright for joining me today, and I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks for joining us.